good morning and welcome. Today we will be looking at how credit has been used as an instrument to minister or by the churches to minister to the poor in two countries in Latin America, that is Bolivia and Brazil. We will be looking at this through practical case studies by watching a video where we have the people speaking for themselves other than other people speaking for them. But before we do this, maybe I could very briefly recap some of our discussion that we had on Tuesday morning. We saw that poverty indeed in many cases can be a very great divide, sometimes even unknowingly. Even within the same congregation, people would worship, but after the worship, they go to their respective neighborhoods. Some will go to the rich neighborhoods, others will go to the poor neighborhoods, and then they hardly meet ever again until maybe Sunday, until Sunday worship. This will affect not only one particular community, but even vis-a-vis communities. It does also affect vis-a-vis particular regions. We also saw that the poor and economically marginalized people, contrary to popular belief, are not always sitting waiting for handouts for them to be able to live. Indeed, if we were to look at in terms of stewardship and how to use minimum resources to survive, we would have much more to learn from people who are aching out a living just to be able to earn a meal a day for the family. And that they are poor not because they don't work hard, but simply because their labor or their efforts is not as adequately rewarded. So in many cases, what they may need is probably additional different tools to help them to earn higher income than they are earning at the moment. It does not necessarily mean that they are poor because they don't work hard. And this is where the concept of in which instrument you use can either continue dependency, as somebody said from Bolivia, we don't want to offer them, they don't want to create a nation of beggars. They want people who can be able to earn a livelihood for themselves. This has necessitated within the church to re-examine the traditional method that the church has used to minister to the poor in terms of its own diaconia ministry. And one of the instruments that have been used by the church, not as extensively as it should be, is credit. Part of the problem, of course, why the churches have felt uncomfortable is using credit, because the Bible does not always appear particularly friendly to lending money and charging interest. Although we were reminded again, the parable of the master who went to safari and left servants with the same amount of money. That's Matthew 25. And how they used the different resources that they were left with. So we find a lot of, in our work, in the Ecumenical Church Road Fund, we write a lot of consolation in this particular parable. We were celebrating 50 years last year. That was not particularly easy for us, and the questions are still being raised because that's supposed to be the Jubilee year. And we were being asked, what should we do in order to restore in terms of the loans that we had outstanding. Of course, if we wrote them off, then we'll go out of business. The other aspect that we looked at is that in terms of using credit, it's not credit per se. We not ourselves in money lending to make money. It's only using credit as an instrument. And credit is only one of the essential instruments among many other methods of intervention of facilitating or enabling human development. And there are, in many cases, other tools that are necessary. We saw that social organization education and awareness may at particular times of intervention, depending on the stage, more important than actually credit. We also saw that in some cases, actually what people may not need is, may need not, is not money, but rather what they may need is ideas and a discussion to so that they may be able to see the potentials. And then you help them to realize their own potentials. After that, maybe the resources that may be required, maybe simple human skills, resources, not just giving them, not just giving them money. We also looked at the core question of lending vis-a-vis giving a grant in particular circumstances. If you are giving a loan, the relationship is very different because there is much greater mutuality and mutual respect. Once a peasant, a farmer, a group of farmers, or even if it's a congregation, they borrow money, they put up a church building, or they put up a primary school, you know, they are taking the responsibility for their own self-development in their own hands. And then they, in terms of negotiation, they're in a greater power parity than if they were just getting a grant, when indeed they could have been able to use a credit. But we also saw that in terms of economic relationship, there is a lot, and even in poverty, there is a lot to do with power and exercise of power and power sharing. The question is, who sets priorities? If we're talking about programs for the poor, and say all of us are here, so how many among us would be representing the poor for whom we hope to be able to give ministry to? This does not only affect government, but is equally true of the churches. And we saw the struggle that some of the churches, and even in our own program that we've gone through, to bring the churches together with other secular organizations that represent communities that are economically marginalized, so that they can be able to sit around together to be able to set priorities. The setting of priorities need to be distinguished from career professional skills. If you are an accountant, it does not make you necessarily better in terms of setting priorities for a farmer. Or you are an agriculturist, because having the agricultural skills, that is only a tool. But in terms of setting priorities, the farmer may be in a better position to be able to determine what is good for the farmer. But the agricultural skills may help in the analysis, so that the farmer may be able to make the appropriate choice. But sometimes we will look down on them in the sense of disparities in terms of education, and we don't take their needs into account. We also saw that small-scale credit is very expensive. If you are processing to grant a loan of $2 million, is very different from if you are considering granting a loan of $1,000. And sometimes the person who is competent to manage a program which averages only $2 million will not be competent to be able to make decisions on a loan of $2,000 or $1,000. So one of the critical issues in credit, from my own experience relating to poor people, is non-accessibility of credit. They are prepared to be able to use a credit program that is appropriately designed for them. However, this is not accessible. And the problem, from my own experience, is not interest rates. Because in any case, within the informal market, where they are borrowing informally from money lenders, people may be paying 20% a month, 25% a month, and sometimes even higher. Although the commercial rates may be 10% a year. So the problem is not they cannot afford, but the problem is that because of the way that the formal credit mechanism has been designed, they are designed for a different category of people. And so if you have to handle this small scale credit, then you have to be able to design different mechanisms to make credit accessible and when needed, in a way that is appropriate for the particular target group that you are dealing with. Issues like collateral, what type of collateral do you ask for? In many cases, we traditionally, we have said that poor people do not have collateral. But the problem is, what type of collateral are you looking for? You know, are you looking for real estate? Of course, if you are looking for real estate, then you are not talking about the poor. So you have to look for other means of collateral. And that is where the whole concept of lending and lending through groups for us is, and for many other organizations, is critical, because then the groups themselves operate as collateral for each other. But that means they have to have a lot more in common other than a money-lending, a business relationship. If you're going to be able to stand as a guarantor to somebody else, you have to have another deeper relationship. This relationship may be religious, it may be social, it may be family, it may be community. It differs from, it may be simple, social circumstances simply fix you in a situation that you feel if you have to move, you have to be able to stand together. The other issue is a question of speed, because if a poor farmer requires credit to buy seeds for planting when it's about to rain, you know, giving the credit after the rains serves no useful purpose. But then you see where majority of the poor people are, you don't have formal institutions. And even the formal institutions that exist, whether they are government or private, if they are private, it's unlikely they will touch this field. If they are government, the way the government institutions have been managed to perpetuate dependency. Because the small-scale credit that they manage, it is grossly abused. We have cases in some of the countries, I don't necessarily want to name, you hear they have set aside maybe $200 million for the poor. But that money is used as political patronage by the powers that be. So if you are not in good favor, and they look at the next elections, and everybody knows, come the next elections, these loans are going to be written off. So instead of inculcating credit seriousness within the group, they actually inculcate perpetual dependency. Because, and then you find by the time a loan is granted, if a loan is for $1,000, because of what we call other social costs, the farmer probably ends up by getting, if it's $1,000, probably ends up by getting only $400. Because the rest disappears, you know, somewhere in the pipeline. All programs that are set for the poor, they actually used to lend to the rich. And we have several cases of this nature. So the problem, therefore, is not that the poor people cannot be able to afford credit, but it is that appropriate credit programs are not available. And for the Ecumenical Church Loan Fund, what we saw is that this is an additional tool, if we evolve it professionally, that will be available to the church, for the church to look, not to be able to re-examine its own different tools that it has, but also to examine the needs of the poor people in the congregation, other than just looking at the needs of the structure, the church as an institution. Now, the two countries, Bolivia and Brazil. Brazil has one of the biggest disparities in terms of income anywhere in the world. A very, very small clique, which is extremely poor, a very, very extremely rich, and a mass of people who are very poor. It is also one of the largest economies in the world. In terms of land ownership, it has one of the largest disparities, and the issues really to land and land rights are critical. And the poor people have died fighting for land. It has also, outside Nigeria, the largest black population. The northeast of Brazil is the poorest part of Brazil. And our program, what you see on the video, is based there. Brazil has extended our mandate almost to breaking point, because we have had to lend to unions, we have had to peasant movements fighting for land rights, we have had to lend to journalists who are fighting for human rights, in addition to groups that are fighting to exert their own culture and realize their own culture. And there have been a lot of debate whether this is really part of the best way to use credit. But the underlying principle has been that is promoting credit is to promote human development, not material benefits per se. Now, Bolivia has the largest, it's the only country in Latin America where the indigenous people are in the majority. And it's also among, although it has moved in the last few years, is among the poorest in the region. And our credit is almost exclusively with the indigenous communities. So with those few remarks, I invite you to watch the video. It will be about 28 minutes.
Numbers. and the Chantage had become very socially aware. So a new program was started in 1971, that is for the promotion of socioeconomic justice, alleviation of poverty, and promotion of self-reliance among the communities. Now, the unique aspect of this program was that it will be available not only to church groups, but to all socioeconomically marginalized groups, irrespective of religion, race, or any other discrimination. Economic activity must result in increased activity and enable the economically marginalized to be able to advocate for their social and political interests. For them to be able to advocate for the social and political interests, it is necessary also for them to be organized and in their own community institutions and organizations. Now, because of this realization and awareness, the board, the ECLOF board, subsequently formulated new policy guidelines to make the ECLOF system more democratic and participatory. Hence, creating a partnership between the churches at the national level and the community and the people's organization in order to achieve a common goal.
Our voices are present at the decision-making table, in the National ECLOF Committee in each country, in regional seminars and consultations, and at the board in Geneva. Women's voices and those of whom we represent from our regions of Asia, Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean. The institutionalization of ECLOF aims to obtain equal participation of women in leadership roles in all decision-making processes, and we are happily seeing how each region is reaching this goal. In the same manner, the democratic and participatory spirit of the fund translates itself today in that each region of the South is duly represented at the board in Geneva with voice and vote. I take there the voice of my region, Latin America and the Caribbean, and this South-North contact and exchange that evolves within the board is resulting in more effective work and greater mutual respect and equality.
The reorganization of ECLOF Geneva has had a lot of advantages for ECLOF Zambia. Because of this reorganization, ECLOF Zambia is able to be registered as a management trust on its own entity. And because it's registered as an individual body in Zambia, it's able to affiliate itself to as many NGOs, non-government bodies that is, including churches, are able to be affiliated and work with ECLOF in serving the needs of the poor and the marginalized people in our community. This has led to more people and more representation on the ECLOF committee in Zambia.
Hitherto our work was only in charity, but now because of the ECLOF loan, churches are beginning to look at the whole question of development among the poor. Because we are involved in the development program, working among the poorest of the poor, our training is also not just in theology or evangelism, and the preachers are not just talking about salvation and piety, they are now also talking about justice and working with the poor. So this has changed our, even the way in which our preachers are preaching in the churches.
This is the work of the Marist Brothers in Northeast Brazil, who in their projects develop an educational program for 250 poor children and youths, including the recovery of street children. They borrowed $23,000 from ECLOF Brazil to complete the youth house and expand their vocational training.
Opa, The Child David Project is an expression of our young people's pastoral, inspired by Dom Lessa, our bishop. It is an educational project that aims to prepare young people by providing them with a profession for a clearer and more solid presence in society. We hope that in a few years, these children that are learning carpentry, agriculture, or poultry raising will first find a place in the world of work in order to improve their level of life. For those that came from the streets, to find a way to be part of society. For this, we have a social and cultural integration program, so that all of them will find their way within the transformation going on in society today, as well as having a place in the church. Finally, there is a question of what kind of person we want to form, one who acts according to the gospel and the heart of Christ. I have been in the project for 8 years, and the project has been an essential point in my life because here I learn a profession. We learn many things so that when we leave the project, we can be something in life and use outside what we have learned here for our livelihood and that of our families. We believe that credit is a fundamental tool to help the poor to develop their programs and improve their living conditions, both material and educational. Our churches are contributing in one way or another for what we call human development through precisely mechanisms such as providing fair loans. With our work at ECLOF, we seek to improve the living conditions of the population in situations of poverty. Some of our priorities are the work with women, introducing savings as part of credit, and that the projects are all environmentally sound. Our loans support productive activities of every nature, the transformation of production and its marketing, as well as some services that are income generating. This work is done through institutions and grassroots organizations.
One of the key aspects of ECLOF is working with grassroots organizations. The Tablería Alta community in the subtropics of Bolivia is an example of this. It was supported by ECLOF Bolivia with $16,000 in working capital for improving potato crops and investment capital for mechanization.
All of us here are leaders of the Tablería Alta community. Annette gave us 6 loans for a total amount of $102,000. For our potato crops and a tractor. We still owe now only about $15,000. The loans have allowed us to improve our situation, and what is also good is that all of our members are paying their loans on time. As a farmer, I want to mechanize. I already have a small motor cultivator with which I work. I have also bought my tools and a wheelbarrow. Before, I carried loads on my back like an animal, but now I can do it on the wheelbarrow.
ECLO supports the activities of ASOPROF, an experience of communal organization happening in the flatlands of Bolivia, with working capital loans amounting to $50,000.
ASOPROF, the National Association of Bean Producers, was created in 1990 and includes 20 small farmers grassroots organizations, which means 3,500 families of small bean farmers. We have been producing beans, a non-traditional product, for 4 years, having farmed over 7,000 hectares of beans in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. Of this, Asoprof exports 60% to Brazil and Japan. We are also developing a variety for export to Colombia. The small farmers have seen their incomes increase considerably since the creation of Asoprof, and we envision very good prospects in the future because we're opening up new markets and producing new varieties of beans.
Fiber for the manufacture of baler twine sold for export is an example of the work of a grassroots organization that incorporates savings to its credit operations. The latest loan it has received from ECLOC for $30,000 was to expand the lending base of its savings cooperative.
Well, APAEB is an advantage in that it helped us improve a lot our situation. Do you know what I mean? If it wasn't for APAEB, things would be much worse. Because they can keep the price of sisal fiber up, thanks to the work of the association. Otherwise, the people who work with sisal would be much worse off. APAEB has three main objectives: to organize the small producers, to evaluate each producer by marketing it directly, not through middlemen, and to look for and provide basic goods at affordable prices. To achieve these goals, APAEB develops various programs. Among them, one of the most important is the Batedeira Comunitaria of sisal fiber that transforms and exports the product directly, guaranteeing the best prices for the products. Also, the work developed by the COPERE, Valletta Rural Credit Cooperative, that looks for alternative credit for small rural producers by tapping local sources within the community as well as government programs. Thanks. I'm really happy with this cooperative because it's the only way that the small farmer has the opportunity that we never had before. With this cooperative, we've benefited. I myself have benefited already. I thank God and the work of APAEB with the cooperative.
Credit and savings is also a choice for popular housing projects in Bolivia. Before we lived in a house that we rented, it was very uncomfortable. I'm very grateful to San Luis Cooperative for giving us a loan. Now we have a house that is ours. I really appreciate that.
With the support of MEDA and ANED, the cooperative has been able to empower one of the most important groups in the informal sector of Bolivia, microentrepreneurs, of which 16 of our clients have benefited with housing loans from ANED.
Affordable loans for income-generating activities owned by women is an effective way of empowering women in their daily struggle for survival and better living conditions for themselves and their families. A loan from ECWAL for $50,000 to FIE in Bolivia, initially used in small loans to 165 women, has shown in only 1 year how rapid rotation of repayments and new loans can benefit well over 1,000 women. A group continue to be the poorest of poor in the world because they're excluded from decision-making spheres and their rights are still being violated. In the perspective of building a new society where men and women are equal, it's very important to support income-generating projects for women, mainly in the communal associations where women together can build their group and personal identities while strengthening and empowering themselves to fight for their rights. Small loans programs, such as this one, go a long way in supporting a variety of economic activities managed and marketed by women. FIE's program introduces women to credit, banking practices, and technical training. Training permits change in the development of human beings, as we all know. The two main factors of any economic activity are the financial resources and the human resources. Through credit, one can obtain financial resources. Through training, one can support the development of the human resources, the development of men and women who will be able to make better use of capital and capital goods. Training that is oriented to productive activities offers technical and administrative tools that help qualify the producers. This, therefore, allows them to use the resources and products for their personal and family benefits and also for that of their organization. Foundation's credit program in the highlands of Bolivia.
Centauri trabaja con un sistema de crédito.
The Centauri Foundation works with a credit system called non-directed or free use credit in rural areas. These are loans that are easily and quickly accessed. To obtain a loan, the farmers form solidarity groups of 3 to 6 persons and apply for their loans in one of our rural agencies. The loan is given within 7 days. The loans are guaranteed by joint or group guarantees. We work with this loan system with the financial support of ANED and ECLOF. People use their loans mainly for activities with small animals, fattening of cows, or for commercial activities. We don't control or strictly supervise the loans because they are non-directed loans. The system has operated for 4 years already, and we have given some 17,000 loans, reaching 6,000 borrowers.
Y en ese tiempo hemos trabajado con unos 17,000 préstamos y con 6,000 prestatarios.
Los problemas de la pobreza.
The problems of poverty in Asia, Africa, and Latin America are similar. The interaction between churches, institutions, and grassroots organizations, guided by a holistic approach to human development, is basically the global strategy of ECLOF to overcome these problems.
Neil, hey Neil, what are you going to do when you leave the project?
After a project, I will work in a farm nearby to help my father, my mother, and my brothers. Work selling chickens, have my own stand, and work in the field.
Bota minha banca para eu vender. Trabalhar em alguma roça que os povos chamar.
With the help of APAEB and the trade unions, we have begun the work of training women so that they know their rights. With this training, we now have women in directors' positions. We have 4 women on the board. APAEB has given total support for the fight of women for their rights.
For us, an important project is the process of training where peasants learn how APAEB works and the administration of cooperatives.
I am very happy to have this house thanks to the San Luis Cooperative. They have helped us and gave us the loan. I am proud and I hope that other families can use this cooperative and live like us and have a home where they can live in peace.
Lately, I've been able to make improvements on my house. Apart from this, out in the back, this work I did with the earnings from potato growing, for which ANED gave us a credit. Then, the earnings we used to better our homes, to eat better, and also for the education of our children.
When I leave the project, I hope to do better things in my life. No one must remain the same size, because a person must think about life. A person cannot wait before something happens. He has to think about life as he grows.
Oh. Down.
Thank you for your patience. I think for the remaining minutes, I prefer that I leave it open to you to raise questions, comments.
One of the things that I look at is, okay, good concept, how do I apply it here? How do I apply that in the inner Portland or Minneapolis or Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Where one of the problems is you don't have that strong of a community. And the family is not as strong, perhaps. maybe I'm what I call canting, seeing why it can't.
Anyone would like to comment on? Yeah. Now we have. It's not. Institutions differ from country to country, and in fact, initially, some of the countries, because of our policy of lending to groups, we say an individual can only benefit if you within a group concept. Sometimes it's very difficult, but when we work on it harder, we find there's a way out. There are organizations that are doing its most micro enterprises here in the US. And I know one of our sister organizations, which is called the Ecumenical Development Cooperative Society. They are based in Holland, but they are working with, they have established a program here in the US. Partly because they are known, the demands here for capital are much higher because of the level of the economy. So the average loan for this institution is $250,000. The maximum loan is $1 million. Our average loan is $8,000. Our maximum loan is $50,000. So they are able to work in this type of environment. And for a very small credit program like ours, the legal mechanism that is required, because we examined this because there was a time that we were discussing with the churches in the US whether we should start a program here. And we found in terms of managing the program, the cost of to manage the program, you require a huge amount of capital because of the legal, the financial requirements. So it is, and I also know there are churches that are doing microcredit program also here. And so I would be willing, if there is somebody with some experience of this, but I will be willing to share information when I go back, because I know people who are doing this here. Yeah.
Yes, how many of the loans go into default? I assume what we heard here was all successful.
Yes.
But I assume some people, for a variety of good or bad reasons, can't repay.
Our average repayment rate is 75%.
75%.
That's the global average.
Right. Okay.
Some countries is 99%. Other countries is 50%.
Okay.
And part of the problem that we face is that we have operated in very high risk, both economically and politically risk countries. For example, when the Bolivian economy collapsed, you may remember, there was a 25,000 rate of inflation. I could not even, nobody could figure out what it meant. And we had a program, still a program there. So you can imagine what happened. We had a similar problem in Brazil. In fact, you know the economy of Brazil only over the last 1.5 years, basically, when the currency has more stabilized. They were having an inflation rate of 5,000 when I went there first in 1992. The inflation was about 4,800%. So we had been operating in Central Africa, you know, Rwanda, the former Zaire, Burundi. We have operated since 1959 in Burma, Myanmar. So we. And because we operate with what we do, our loans are in local currency. And when the loans are repaid, I explained this last time, the loans form revolving fund. And the money remains in the country, so that it's lent to other groups. So because of that, we are normally, we will not be the first one to get out of the country, partly because of the nature of our own mission. So we do face those problems. But where the economies have been relatively stable and the management of the program is well, you know, the repayment rates are very high. But it's also possible that you can have high repayment rate from our perspective. You can have 95%, but we will still consider the program not successful. Because we're not money lending. We go behind to see to what extent are we achieving our own mission in the particular country. So a country, like one country came and said, look, you are criticizing us, but we have 98% repayment rate. I would say, wait a minute, our goal is not giving credit and collecting money. We don't think you are, the way you're operating, you are achieving the mission for which you established.
And importantly, is part of the loaning is done in a tiered way. So it starts out, this is from reading from last night, at $80, and it goes up from there so that people get in the habit of the repaying. And if somebody's going to default on the loan, they'll default on a very small loan, which is intriguing. But one of the questions I've got is, when you talk about the group of three or six people guaranteeing the loan, is that so much a financial guarantee, or is it more of a personal guarantee that no one of the six would have the financial wherewithal to pay the loan, but that becomes a social lever for them to work together for success? Which one is it more?
It's both. First, the whole question of support. If we are working in a group and you are successful, then you become the role model. And it's your responsibility to be able to help the other members of the group. That is critical. Or you may still in the same business, but or in different business. And in several countries, this has happened, where one person who proves successful is able to help and uplift the others. That is one part. The other part, so the whole question of training and role model. The other part is, you see, the mutual responsibility to each other, to the point that some of the group is a member of the group dies, the others assume the financial responsibility to pay back the loan. Because one of the things that they realize, the success of the repayment depends on whether you can continue lending. Because they know this money is not going to be sent to somebody in Geneva. It will only be sent from that country if that country becomes economically strong, like withdraw money from Singapore, and we are withdrawing from South Korea, and we withdraw from several countries in Europe. They return the capital, and that capital is used elsewhere. So that is a very important term. So the financial risk that I'm prepared to risk financially for you, and you are prepared to risk financially for me as well. So the two are interlinked.
I came in a little bit late, and you were just talking about that whether all the loans get paid back isn't necessarily the most important part. The most important part is your mission. And could you just repeat what the mission is?
First, let me say that we are a credit program.
Right.
As a credit program, we must make sure that we run as a credit program. We cannot allow loans to go in default because of our mission.
Right,
otherwise, we will be defeating our own goal. Mm-hmm. Now, so our primary mission is to support the mission work of the churches, poor churches, in different, whether it's in worship, in evangelism, or in when they have schools or community facilities. That's the first part of our mission. The next part of our mission is promotion of socioeconomic justice for economically marginalized and the self-reliance of communities, and the revision of poverty. That is the other category. So you have one loan which is primary, one program which is primary for the churches, then you have another program which for the communities, irrespective of religion.
Can I provide an example?
Yeah, sure.
They have a program in Malaysia, and the economy of Malaysia has really gone up now, so that people are living well. And that program had turned into rich people lending money to each other and repaying, of course, because they can afford. And there, since it is not going to the people that are targeted, so even if they pay 100%, then it does not go with what it is intended. So Malaysia is being asked to not to have the program there because the economy has improved, so it can move to another country that has a better a needed.
Actually, we ask them not just to return the capital, but we ask them to start raising funds themselves. Mm-hmm. Because when they were needed or helped by other people from other countries to return to start fundraising so that we can be able to serve other countries that are in a worse situation than themselves. Yeah, okay, thank you very much, and we wish you well, and we live today, and it has been a pleasure to be with you.